The reason I come to my conclusion is because I have very strong belief in our ancient liberties. And one of the greatest liberties that we have as Britons is that we can go about our lawful business without having to prove to anybody who we are. The state has no right to say to us, who are you and what are you doing? But as long as we are not breaking the law, there should be no need for the state to stop us or demand to see our papers. And if you look at the European angle of this, there is a very strong one, because the continental state has historically been a top-down state. And this ties in with the Napoleonic law and the civil code, that the state is powerful and the individual is there to fit in with the state. In our system, the common law, it's always been the other way around, and that the state will only act to limit what you are allowed to do if there is good reason to do so and with the consent of your representatives in Parliament. This has made us a very free and liberal society, and I think that anything that attacks that is dangerous and makes us less free and gives the state more control over our lives, which, as a Conservative, I'm not in favour of.
In 2003, in his book, A Brief History of Crime, later republished under the title The Abolition of Liberty, reflecting on the number of state encroachments on the private lives of ordinary people under Tony Blair, Peter Hitchens had this to say. A very short time ago, anyone in England would have thought all these cases were comical, silly bungles by heavy-handed, inexperienced and humourless juniors without any greater significance. This kind of thing does not happen here, we would have thought. Therefore, we may safely laugh at it. And yet, this kind of thing does happen here, not by mistake, but through the conscious and deliberate actions of powerful public officials. A pattern is perceptible in these incidents which is not reassuring. It seems likely that similar prosecutions and investigations will happen with increasing frequency and seriousness. Such speech codes have been rigorously enforced on many university campuses for some time. The author, for example, has had his microphone switched off in mid-speech by student officials following baseless allegations of racism. Such officials frequently find their way into national politics, and the expansion of the universities means that many police officers, lawyers and court officials will have been exposed to and possibly infected by such attitudes during their education. They are now spreading into the country as a whole as the intolerant campus consensus infects the police and the prosecuting authorities. New European Union provisions under the Racism and Xenophobia Directive threaten to provide a legal basis for more official, widespread persecution of certain opinions. One major purpose of this book is to warn that there is now a real threat to liberty of thought and speech in this country, a threat which cannot be lightly dismissed by any observant or alert citizen. I hope the warning will, for once, be heeded. Sadly, it was not heeded. Let's see what else Hitchens has to say. I have sought to explain in this book what appears to be the driving force of the new law. It is based, like the other changes that have overturned English life since 1960, on the new secular religion of the educated elite. Socialist and collectivist in origin, it worships the welfare state. It believes neither in absolute truth nor in absolute right and wrong. It demands special protection for cultures and lifestyles that consciously and deliberately undermine the morality and beliefs of the older generation. It uses the grievances of activists within racial and sexual minorities as the pretext for general change. It rejects the whole idea of punishment and affects to believe in rehabilitation while failing to pursue this objective with any real consistency. It is careless of the ancient liberties of the English Constitution, which it is often not heard of, preferring arbitrary group rights granted to favoured lobbies over binding restraints on the power of the state. Having taken possession of the state, it believes that government is essentially benevolent and does not need to be restrained. It is hostile to individual self-improvement by the masses, although members of the elite are permitted to improve their own lives and even to become extremely rich. It is suspicious of individual wealth and most types of property. It sympathises with the drug abuser and can see the burglar's point of view. It sees respectability and restraint as repression. It regards what remains of the police force as the army of the rich against the poor, of the morally conservative against the liberated. Now, in his 10 years in power, Tony Blair passed an astonishing 26,849 laws in total, an average of 2,663 per year, or 7.5 a day. Labour continued this madness under Gordon Brown, who broke the record in 2008 by passing 2,823 new laws, a 6% increase on his megalomaniac predecessor. In 2010, Labour's last year in power before handing over the reins to the Blairite social radical David Cameron, there was a 54% surge in privacy cases brought against public bodies, and the Cabinet were refusing freedom of information requests at a rate of 51%. The vast number of new laws under Labour does not count the 2,100 new regulations the EU passed in 2006 alone, which apparently is an average per year for them. Now, just before he left office, Gordon Brown snuck through the 2010 Equality Act, which, among other things, opened up a minefield for any private employers in this country and formally tried to end over 1,000 years of British tradition by abolishing cognatic primogeniture, which wouldn't actually be done until 2013, when socialist revolutionary, I mean conservative, Prime Minister David Cameron signed the Succession to the Crown Act. Now, of all these huge changes under Labour, many of them were in the area of criminal law. By 2008, Labour had created more than 3,600 new offences. What were some of these new laws that Labour were passing? Well, of course, a lot of them were silly red tape, naturally. They include things like creating a nuclear explosion, selling types of flora and fauna not native to the UK, such as the grey squirrel, ruddy duck, or Japanese knotweed, willfully pretending to be a barrister or a traffic warden, disturbing a pack of duck eggs when instructed not to by an authorised officer, obstructing workers carrying out repairs to the Dockland Light Railway, offering for sale a game bird killed on a Sunday or Christmas Day, allowing an unlicensed concert in a church hall or community centre, and a ship's captain may end up in court if he or she carries grain without a copy of the International Grain Code on board. Scallop fishing without the correct boat, breaking regulation number 10 of the 1998 apple and pear grubbing up regulations, selling Polish potatoes. I mean, there are tons more of these. However, there are some more serious breaches of civil liberty. One common tactic of the Blair government was to use moral panic to pass radical new legislation. For example, in 2006, he passed the Terrorism Act that overturned habeas corpus and gave the British police the right to detain anyone for any reason for 90 days. Now, at the time, this got widespread public support because of the recent 7/7 bombings in London. This basically means that the police can arrest you for any reason without you necessarily having committed a crime.
Do you think any of us are going to actually make it to the protest that we're trying to attend legally?
I'm not going to ask those sorts of comments. We've got a job to do and we will do it.
Excuse me, you missed something.
Thank you.
The operation unearthed some paper masks, scissors and several toy soldiers.
What he said was that due to the items that have been seized, we can't go on to Fairford because there might be a breach of the peace, and so we're going to be escorted back to London. That's what he said.
Hello? This is illegal.
They won't let you stop. You can try.
Do you want to get up in private? I need to speak to... They're not letting us out. Can we go?
The police are pressing the door against me. They're using three people.
Hey, this is a moving vehicle. He wants to talk. He wants to talk to your senior officer.
They've got five policemen pressing the door closed. They're filming me.
In legal terms, they can't do this.
one area in which the Labour government used moral panic cynically to overturn long-standing common law principles was the unfortunate murder of Stephen Lawrence, which they used to eliminate the double jeopardy rule and, as per the McPherson report in 1999, put an end to colourblind policing. Here is an extract from McPherson, quoted by Hitchens. Every individual must be treated with respect. Colourblind policing must be outlawed. The police must deliver a service which recognises the different experiences, perceptions and needs of a diverse society. So that's the end of equality under the law then, isn't it? And one of the things that McPherson recommends in that report, which Labour then enacted, was how is a racial attack, as opposed to just a normal crime, defined? It is if anybody perceives it. So it doesn't necessarily have to be the victim. Any onlooker at all, if they perceive racism, then the attack is racist under the law. To underline the point that the new Labour assault on British common law was carried out by those with the vision of the anointed, that is, the elites against the people, check out this Brian Paddock quotation. Brian Paddock was the Deputy Commissioner of the London Met Police and now sits in the House of Lords. This is Hitchens once again. In his internet conversation, Mr. Paddock revealed a worldview that owed a good deal more to Rousseau and other revolutionaries than it did to the stolid reassurance of George Dixon. The concept of anarchism has always appealed to me, he wrote. The idea of the innate goodness of the individual corrupted by society or the system. I believe many people are forced into causing harm to others by the way that society operates. They would not behave in this way if the current system did not exist or was radically different. Other samples of this thought included, what do we do about crack and smack, especially in Brixton? Bottom line, screw the dealers, help the addicts. And do not treat all police officers as lapdogs of a corrupt capitalist system. Dogs sometimes turn on their owners. When I say that Jean-Jacques Rousseau has a lot to answer for, this is the sort of thing I'm talking about. And now in 2018, when a man is fined for a joke, and when a kid is arrested for posting the lyrics of pop records online, you can see the extent to which the United Kingdom has become a police state. Till next time. And a very special thanks to Sir Percy Blakeney, the Crimson Satyr, Time Stealer, Nuri Nelson, Macadamia, Rosie Alpaca, Kuzga, Holy Spatula, Bruno Liette, Tragic Vision, Michael Burt, Ginger Bill, Blake Barrows, Charles Vincent, and Edward Darrah.